Hello and welcome to episode number 14 of Frontline. This is the Safe Ministry podcast that's aimed at people on the front line of safe ministry in the churches and organisations in the Anglican Diocese of Sydney. My name is Neil Atwood. I'm the parish consultant on the Safe Ministry team, and I'm joined initially anyway by Kylie Williams, my co-worker, and the training consultant on the Safe Ministry team.
Hi, Neil. Welcome, everyone.
Just a reminder that each episode's got a page on safeministry.org.au, which has a summary of the episode content, any links that may be referenced in the episode. There's a link there to play the episode, and of course a comment section where you can leave feedback and suggestions. You can find those pages by heading to safeministry.org.au/frontline. And of course, you can also subscribe to Frontline in your favourite podcast app. And I feel like I'm sort of in Groundhog Day when I say that it's been a while since the last episode, because it was a bit of a while between that previous episode to that one as well. But to be honest, that's as much down to the crazy busy start to the year that 2023 has seen. I had plans to try and squeeze this episode in before Christmas, but that just didn't happen. But nevertheless, it's good to be back now. Look, I've just got a couple of sort of more housekeeping type things to do before we introduce our guest for today's episode. As I just said, it was a very busy start to the year. And in fact, this is probably something of a record busy time for Safe Ministry training. In February, we saw over 1,000 people complete their Safe Ministry training. The vast majority of those online, but of course there were definitely some from the February 18th face-to-face events. And certainly while the vast majority got through their courses with no issues, there are always the people who leave it just that little bit too late and they find themselves doing refresher because actually their training has expired, they probably should be doing essentials, and so on. And I just wanted to take the opportunity to say that is something that is in the role of the local church to check. I guess just for clarity, because there's still obviously we get questions around this, but there is a 30-day grace period that's built into the training system to allow someone to complete refresher within 30 days of their previous training expiring. If their training has expired longer than that, then they must do essentials. And really, they should stand down from children's ministry until they've completed that training. We've also seen quite a bit of turnover of Safe Ministry reps in our churches in recent months. Again, that's not unusual around the end of the year, start of the year. But for those of you who are new to the role and perhaps catching up with Frontline for the first time, it's great to have you with us. And please do familiarise yourself with the safeministry.org.au and the safeministry.training websites, because you'll find the answers to lots of questions there. And in fact, there's also a regular sort of Safe Ministry Rep 101 Zoom workshops that I hold. And those dates are communicated via the Safe Ministry newsletter, and you can always see when they're coming up. Generally, I do those about four times a year. Well, on to our main topic for this episode. You may remember that last time we interviewed Lachlan Bryant, who was the director of what is now, of course, known as the Office of Safe Ministry, or the Office of the Director of Safe Ministry. Well, in keeping with that theme, our guest today is the chaplain from that office. Her name is Belinda Byrne, if you haven't met her before, and I want to say welcome, Belinda.
Oh, thank you, Neil and Kylie. Thank you for inviting me to join you. Yes, my name's Belinda Byrne. I'm married to John. We've been married for 31 years. We have five children, and I'm a mother-in-law to three, and we also have a little granddaughter who's two. And I attend church at the Bridge Anglican in Kirribilli and live on the North Shore in Sydney.
That's great. Belinda, so how did you actually come to be the chaplain? Like, what is it that's led you to this? What have you been doing in your life up until this point? Because it's quite a unique sort of a role and can be quite a challenging role.
Yeah, well, it's been a long journey to this point. And I guess I look back to when I became a Christian when I was 14, and I grew up in a non-Christian family, but I was friends with some girls who just kept on very patiently loving me and telling me about Jesus. And in fact, I was a bit of a bully. I teased them, and you know, this is in year 9 at high school, but they just kept on praying for me, kept on being kind to me and showing me grace. And I found out later, actually, one of the mums of two of these girls was also praying for me, and her whole Bible study group was praying for me. And I became a Christian through them. Yeah. And I mean, I guess eventually I decided that Jesus was someone I wanted to follow. And I've really just never looked back from that, quite aside from being the way to God and the way to salvation. When I became a Christian, actually, my dad tried to convert me to Buddhism, even though he wasn't a Buddhist, and to communism, even though he wasn't a communist. And he just didn't want me to be a Christian. And eventually he told me it was a phase that I'd grow out of. That was about 40 years ago now. I haven't grown out of that one yet. And I don't ever expect that I will. So I guess from that time onwards, I just became really passionate about Jesus and about the church, about the community of believers, and that also has never left me. So I worked. I trained as a teacher originally, but I never actually taught. Not in a school. In between time off to raise children, I've worked in parish ministry actually all my life. And so first as kids minister in two different churches, and then on in as assistant and associate ministers in various parishes. And I had a stint, a very short time in Anglicare, setting up a program called the Shift Program, which provides support and housing for families coming out of situations of trauma, so primarily refugee families and families coming out of situations of domestic violence. As far as the chaplain role goes, I knew the previous chaplain, and I was working in a parish role at that time, and I had looked at her, that the work that she did, and thought, I'd like to be in that team. That was one thing, and I would like to do that work, that pastoral care sort of work. But so when the role was advertised, I actually had my eye out for it, and I applied, and I was offered the role, which I very gratefully responded to.
Right. And yeah, that was during COVID, wasn't it? So it was very interesting getting you on board as part of the team when we actually couldn't meet together for a long time. So I guess that was a bit of a challenge coming out of ministry from a church into a role here where you are wanting to help people. But let's move on to what do you actually do as a chaplain? Because, you know, like, I'm imagining the job description could be quite varied.
It is, certainly is, Kylie. So I guess, I mean, one of the main things that drew me to the role was the primary, I guess, what I primarily do, which is to provide pastoral support for those who disclose abuse by a church worker. I guess I'm also a resource for church workers in the diocese. So I advise ministers and other church workers and just provide support for them. And sometimes that's questions about situations and abuse and what to do. Other times it's more complex pastoral situations that just a minister, a church worker are finding difficult to navigate. And so I can provide some support through those sort of situations. I also offer provide training in Moore College and youth works now and again with MT&D, and sometimes with ministry wives as well, and really just when I'm asked to. And every now and then I'm called on to facilitate an apology or to be present for an apology from the Archbishop or one of the bishops on behalf of the diocese to a survivor of abuse. And of course, there's a whole, like any job, there's a whole other swathe of things I do.
Right. So you could actually be working in quite diverse areas from one day to the next, sometimes working with groups, sometimes working with individuals, sometimes working with really people who have had some really traumatic events in their life that have actually set the foundation for their life, and they're at this stage now coming forward and talking about it. And I could imagine that would be quite stressful at times. You really don't know what's going to come as you, you know, turn up to work each day. I'm wondering, how do you actually cope with those stresses of the job? Like, you have a team of people around you, or how do you manage and cope with what work might throw at you?
Yeah, it can be a stressful job, it's true. And part of it is managing crisis, and obviously crisis never comes at a convenient time. So I have a lot of things in place actually to just sustain myself through the work. One is a not negotiable of my own Bible reading and prayer every single morning. It doesn't matter how early I have to get up, I get up earlier so that I can read my Bible and pray, because just because that's so sustaining for me, and a cup of coffee alongside of that doesn't hurt either. I just read for fun, like I read a novel every night. That's something else I do, which I find really therapeutic and helpful. I take quite a lot of time off, so I have quite a lot of time holidays, I guess. And what I find is particularly helpful in terms of holidays for me is taking holidays where I'm outdoors and where I'm active and I'm in nature. And I've found going for walks, big long walks in nature, I find really, really helpful. And lots of other things, spending time with my family and friends, playing piano. There's a whole lot of things I enjoy, gardening, patting my dogs. There's some just really basic things that I find helpful.
Yeah, excellent. I'm assuming the dogs go on those walks with you too sometimes.
Sometimes, not always.
So it can be stressful, but I know that there can also be highlights for you. Are you able to share any of those with us?
For me, one of the highlights is coming to work each day and working with the team. It's a really good team, and it's a privilege to be in that team. The other thing that I look back on and see is that stands out to me is the resilience of the survivors I work with. And I can think of one in particular who, for her, she came to us with a complaint, and it went through the process that we have for dealing with complaints. And we listened to her, we believed her, but because of the nature of what had happened and some of the circumstances around that, it wasn't actually a very satisfactory outcome in the end. But to see her actually flourishing at the end of quite a long process, even though she hadn't really received justice in any sort of earthly sense, for me was really humbling and really encouraging. And so I learn a lot. And so it's, you know, in a more general sense, I guess it's a highlight for me that I'm learning from some incredible survivors who I get the privilege of working with.
You're definitely building up an understanding of the way that God can be working in even such terrible, terrible circumstances.
Yeah, that's right.
So now, Belinda, some people might recognise you as the chaplain who speaks to us at the beginning of Safe Ministry Training. Many, many people do our Safe Ministry Training, particularly online. And you have a message of self-care for people doing the online training. Two questions for you, a two-pronged approach here. Why is that important? And then what are the challenges that you see for people in our churches, for our diocese, in terms of safe ministry?
Okay, well, big questions. To do with self-care, I would start by saying, well, you know, everyone's heard of flight or fight, right? And that's a very simplified way. It's a really simplified way to describe a system in our bodies that's designed to keep us safe whenever our brain or body perceives a threat. And that actually means anything that causes stress for us. So that might be, you know, anything from a difficult conversation to driving in Sydney traffic to some chemical floating around in the air that your body's reacting to and you don't even know it. All of those sort of things cause stress for our bodies and activate that fight or flight system at some level. But we're actually not designed to live constantly under stress. If we do, every aspect of our being will eventually crumble, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. And, you know, we'll see signals of that long before we actually completely collapse. We'll see in ourselves irritation or loss of compassion or I don't know, physical symptoms, turning to things like alcohol or even TV or social media, you know, tons of things. And so this is a vulnerable state to be in. And it's often the case that when a church leader starts making choices that harm themselves or others, it's in a context where they have been living too long in this sort of adrenaline-fueled state. So the good news is that God has kindly provided each one of us with another system in our bodies, which is often described as rest and digest. And when we're in this state, resting, relaxing, you know, like I said, spending time in nature, for example, our bodies actually reset and restore, and that's self-care. And that the time in that sort of space, the rest and digest, actually fuels us to do more of the work that we're doing. And we're made to spend time in both of these states. That's how God made us. So what does it say if we don't? Because even God rested on the seventh day of doing his work in creation. So that's why it's important. It's how God's designed us to work. And, you know, it's what's best for us and for the others around us, the people who we're looking to serve. As far as challenges for the diocese and our churches, I heard this saying recently. It was actually on a podcast. Don't let what you know stand in the way of what you can learn. So I think we've come a long way in our society and in this diocese in how we protect children and vulnerable people, and we do actually have solid systems and processes in place. But there's also much to learn and areas that we can improve in. And I think we live in a society that seems or is increasingly complex, and it could be tempting to respond to that out of a position of fear, battening down the hatches and trying to protect ourselves. But I think we need to keep asking questions about how we can do better, what areas need improving, what needs to change. And that's not easy, you're right. But I think much came out of the Royal Commission into institutional responses to child abuse, but that in many ways is reactive work. And I think being proactive and keeping on being proactive is harder. But really, as the church, we should be the leaders in how we care for people and protect people. And we have God incarnate as our model.
Thanks, Belinda. Look, that's some really helpful insights there. And I guess just on that last point, a line I like to, you know, to use often when I'm talking to people in our parishes is about how do we develop a culture of safe ministry in our churches.
Yeah.
So we're not thinking of it as yet another layer of compliance or things like that, but that it just becomes part of our, who we are, part of our DNA, I suppose, in the way we do things and the way we think about our relationships with other people, the people that we're serving and the people that we're ministering to. So that sort of connects with just what you said, I think, as well.
Mm.
So I just wonder, one last question for you. If you could say, and we ask this of most of our guests, if you could say one thing to the ministers, to the safe ministry reps who are listening, if you could say one thing to them about safe ministry, what would it be?
Well, I think, Neil, like many of your guests, I actually have two things to say, so I hope that's okay. I think one is that having a church in which people are safe and feel that they are safe is essential, not just to avoid people getting hurt, although obviously that is vital, but because if people don't feel safe, then the response in their bodies and brains is such that they actually can't take in what we're trying to communicate to them, and that is the good news of the gospel. And so unless our churches are safe, there's a sense in which we, you know, we have this enormous hurdle before we've even started to preach the gospel. The second one is really very similar to what you just said. Having a safe church goes beyond ticking the boxes of having a safe ministry rep, doing the training and so on. And these are good first steps. They're really, really important. But a safe church has a culture where it's okay for people to speak up, where different voices are represented in parish council and leadership teams and so on, where a person may not actually fit the mold but is loved, included and accepted. And that's not easy. Churches attract a whole range of people. We're all different and we bump into one another's sin. And actually that is how it should be. And to create this sort of culture that, Neil, you were talking about and I'm talking about, that actually takes leadership that's secure, a leader who's secure in their own place before God, who's not easily threatened, who's comfortable with difference. And so as leaders, I say to leaders, work on yourself. And that's actually one of the hardest things about leadership, but one of the most important. Work on yourself and your relationship with God. And that will actually contribute to having a safer, more flourishing church where people can hear and respond to the gospel.
Good words, Belinda. Thank you. Very helpful.
Thanks, Belinda.
It's been great getting to know you a bit better. And thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that is about it for episode number 14. Kylie, tell us how people can contact us.
Always, you can go to the contact page of safeministry.org.au website. You can send an email to info@safeministry.org.au, or you can leave us a comment on the Frontline episode page.